welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark LePonier. In this hour adventure, later on we hear The Night of the Guns on Escape from 1954. But right now, it's suspense with an original true story from Emily Wooldridge called The Wreck of the Maid of Athens, her singular published work, from November 30th, 1953, on CBS. Joseph Kearns and Agnes Moorehead star.
Autolite and its 98,000 dealers bring you Miss Agnes Moorehead in tonight's presentation of Suspense. Tonight, Autolite presents the first radio adaptation of one of the most amazing human documents ever written, the personal diary of Emily Wooldridge, which she called The Wreck of the Maid of Athens. Our star, the first lady of suspense, Miss Agnes Moorehead.
Hi, Hap. Buying a magazine, I see.
Yes, sir, Harlow.
Well, why not take this one?
Oh, no thanks. Everyone to his own taste, you know, Harlow.
In buying magazines, yes, Hap. But in replacing electrical system parts for your car, definitely no.
Huh?
Well, for example, many leading makes of our finest cars have Autolite electrical systems as original equipment, right?
Right.
But if replacements are needed, do the owners of those Autolite-equipped cars insist on Autolite original service parts? Exactly the same as those specified by the car manufacturer?
Well, if they don't, they're sure taking a big chance with a big investment, Harlow.
They sure are, Hap, because Autolite original service parts meet the electrical system specifications of the car manufacturers. And they know what's best for their cars. So, friends, insist on and be sure you get only Autolite original service parts for your Autolite-equipped car. See your car dealer or your dealer handling Autolite original service parts. And remember, from bumper to tail light, you're always right with Autolite.
And now, Autolite presents Emily Wooldridge's The Wreck of the Maid of Athens, starring Miss Agnes Moorehead, hoping once again to keep you in suspense. Eighty-four years ago tonight, there sailed from the port of London the brigantine Maid of Athens. 60-some days later, off the cold southern tip of South America, the ship was afire and sinking in heavy seas. Aboard her, along with the necessary officers and crew, was the wife of the master, Captain Richard Wooldridge. Her name was Emily, and this is her story.
First mate's overside, sir. He was trying to free the port lifeboats. We can't go after him. Those boats are jammed. We'll never use them.
Very well. Tell the rest of the men to come here. We'll have to abandon ship as quickly as possible.
Perhaps the most terrible thing of all was the fact that there wasn't room in the lifeboats for all the men. Always in my memory will live the picture of those who fought to live and who died so hopelessly in those cold seas. Fearful desolation. Great waves seemed to swallow in their troughs our two surviving lifeboats. And when we were lifted to their crest, the sight of the burning ship met our eyes. The gallant Maid of Athens. She seemed to me the loneliest thing I'd ever seen as we deserted her. Looking the other way by the grace of Providence, we could see a low fringe of land on the horizon. My husband took this to be the island of San Carlo and perhaps our salvation. But when we arrived near the shore, we found that instead of safety, we had run on even greater danger in the heavy surf that pounded the rocky island. To try to land through it was a fatal risk, as was proved later, but my husband had no other choice than to order the boats into it.
Stern around! The second boat there! Stern around! Stern to shore! Keep your bows into the surf! Get alongside us and do as we do! Steady now! Keep us standing properly! On the ready now! All right now, follow it in! Boat, sir. Don't go broadside. Don't get broadside. You'll surf for your life.
Except for the vision of a wave towering over us, high as a mountain and falling on us, I have no memory of coming ashore. As though awaking, no, not quite awaking, from a nightmare, I saw our boat overturned on a tiny strip of sand. I saw my husband and the men who had survived the landing, and I saw the bodies of those from the second boat who had not. My husband was pulling the last of these from the angry surf. Then he was bending over me where I lay.
Are you all right, my dear?
Yes. And you?
I'm quite all right. But the poor devils in the other boat.
Oh, yes, I know.
Besides us, there are only four left now. Hayward, Oates, Roberts, and old Lawson. There was nothing I could do to save the others.
Of course there wasn't. Everyone knows you did everything you could do.
Oh, I hope so. Can you stand up?
Yes, I think I...
Come on.
Oh, Dick, do the rest of us have a chance?
A very good chance. Come along. We'll go further up the shore and build a shelter of some sort. It's a nasty cold wind.
Hey, Captain!
Yes, Lawson.
Me and the others have been talking. We'd like a word with you, if you don't mind.
Oh, of course. What is it?
We've lost a number of our chums, as you well know.
Oh, I do know, Lawson. I'm terribly sorry.
Not much good being sorry, is it? Not going to help any of the poor blokes, is it?
Well, just what do you mean, Lawson? I feel our loss is greatly, if not greater than you do. Now, what do you mean?
The way we've been talking, easy to say how sorry you are after the damage is done. But what we want to know is, why wasn't something done to prevent it from happening?
I don't think I quite understand you. Every precaution was taken in London. The cargo and the loading was well supervised. You all know that.
Then why did the ship catch fire?
I don't know.
Nobody said nothing to us about a cargo that would catch fire.
It was not a dangerous cargo, Hayward.
Then why did it catch fire?
I've told you I don't know. Under given circumstances, the most peaceful voyage can go wrong.
What circumstances, Captain?
It's only decent to place the blame when you've lost as many chums as we have. A fine lot they were.
Now listen to me, men. Talk like this won't do any good. I'll admit we've had more than our share of bad luck.
Well, you say aye to that.
But we six were spared. And if we are to survive, we've got to work together.
There won't be any more than survival on this filthy island. We haven't got food stores for a week, and our waiter doesn't see a ship once a year.
Well, we won't wait to be found by a ship. Now, the mainland of South America is a bit more than 300 miles west. I have the navigational instruments to get us there, if we can repair the boat.
Oh, maybe it's not so bad as you thought it was, Lawson.
It's bad enough. We'll have to be lucky to live to tell of it.
It won't be easy, but it is possible. And I can't stress the importance of speed strongly enough. There are two reasons. One is scarcity of food. The other is more important. We're approaching the storm season in these latitudes. And when it arrives, the gales are almost constant.
Aye. We're having our share of bad fortune. That's a fact.
We shall be all right if we work quickly. If we can repair the boat in, say, 4 days and launch it without accident, I have every confidence that we'll be on our way to safety and home.
Darkness fell as Lawson and the others buried the dead. A thick fog settled on the island, and in spite of exhaustion, the dampness and cold made sleep out of the question. We spent the night huddled over fires, one for the crew and one for my husband and me. We were separated from the men by only a few paces, and although nothing further was said, there was a tension between the two groups. The next morning, my husband set the men to work on the boat where her planks had been battered on the rocks, and he set out to search the island, hoping to find a beach better suited to launching through the surf. No sooner had he disappeared than Lawson, a sullen, unpleasant man from the start of the voyage, walked toward me, and behind I could see the other men leaving their work to follow him.
I trust you spent the night counting your blessings, Mrs. Wooldridge.
Why, I'm thankful to be alive, as we all should be.
Then did you give a thought to the poor boys what went down? And then we buried?
Of course. My husband told you men to repair the boat. Why aren't you doing it?
We want you to hear what we have to say.
Well, what do you want with me? What is it?
The day you stepped aboard in London, I said there was going to be trouble. I told the boys, the ones that's dead and gone now, a woman at sea is a deadly thing. I told them.
We didn't half believe him then, but we do now.
But you can't believe it. There's no truth in it. It's only a superstition.
I am one with some meaning behind it. Do you know the history of the Maid of Athens? Yeah, well, I do. 42 voyages she had. 42, not a sea she hadn't crossed through fair weather and foul. And she'd never carried a woman until you came aboard.
What do you say to that?
Well, it doesn't mean anything.
It does. We got more proof on our side than you have on yours. We saw the ship go down.
It isn't proof.
Listen to this. I've sailed for 32 years with good fortune all the way. That is, until this trip.
How do you answer that?
There is no answer.
But then you admit that you're the cause of the trouble.
I do not. You're acting like children.
Children, you say? You should be speaking of the poor fatherless children of them that went down, made orphans by a fire that nobody can explain. And maybe you can.
Well, now, the rest of you, listen to me. There's no one to blame. When you're carrying cotton, and if it gets damp, sometimes the weight of it causes pressure and friction and fire start. It's happened before.
When?
I don't know, but it does happen. My husband told me it did.
Any of you chums ever hear of anything like that? The fire starting because cotton is wet?
In 12 years at sea, I never did.
It happened because a woman at sea is a deadly thing.
You've caused it. There's no doubt of it.
That's not true.
Can you prove that it's not?
Well, one needs facts to disprove something, and you accuse me without facts.
What you mean is you can't prove we're wrong. I would take that as your confession. Hey, lads?
It is not. It is not. I have nothing to confess.
You brought us this trouble, and we all know it. There's nothing you can say to change our minds. And that goes for what you might say for your husband, too. Good day, Mrs. Wooldridge. Come on, lads.
Quite obviously, there was an unspoken threat in their words. And although I hoped that I had maintained my composure in front of them, I was frightened. Considering the problems already weighing upon my husband, it was my play to keep this fear to myself. But when he returned, my will weakened, and I told him about it.
My dear, you mustn't let it trouble you. As you told them, they are like children. What they think today will be forgotten tomorrow.
But I can't forget their faces. They hated me.
Oh, no, no. They only thought that they did. Well, they must have something to hate because of the situation we're in. Remember, before it was me they blamed?
I suppose you're right. I suppose I'm silly to be frightened, but... Oh, please, Dick, don't leave me alone with them again.
I hope I won't have to. But if I do mind to have courage and know that although they are simple in their logic, they are good seamen and they're very important to us.
His words did give me courage. The men were important to him as seamen. When he said that, I realized that he was more important to them because he was the only one who could set us on a course that would take us to safety. He was the only one who could navigate. With his importance to them, surely the men would do nothing to me. Well, that is what I hopefully thought. But I could not forget the expressions of hate on the faces of the four men as I stood before them. Thinking back to my meeting with Lawson and the men, it was impossible for me to understand how they could be so blind. But when one remembers the witchcraft trials in Salem and the burning of witches in Europe, then one realizes that humans have often used demons and superstitions where no reasonable cause for a situation can be found. As the work on the boat continued, it became my responsibility to add to our meager larder. With some rough hooks fashioned by my husband and some stout cordage secured to the rocks, I fished. Although I checked these set lines often, even at night when sleep was impossible, the results were disappointing. I thought it possible that the attitudes of the men would soften toward me because of my efforts to better conditions, but there were no indications that this change was taking place, only dark, accusing looks. One, Hayward, the youngest of them, seemed less hateful than the others. He averted his eyes when I looked at him. That evening of the second day, Lawson paid a visit on my husband. A visit that made my fears all the more real.
Top of the evening to you, Captain.
Thank you, Lawson.
Mrs. Wooldridge.
Good evening.
Though the top of the evening ain't worth anything on this rotten wet island, I hope you don't mind my coming, sir.
Of course not, Lawson. What is it?
Are you satisfied with the way the work is going, sir?
Yes, I am more than satisfied. To be be quite honest, considering the mood you men were in the day we arrived, I expected trouble. I'm thankful that there hasn't been any.
I'm a bit upset we were losing all those chums. But it's survival of the fittest, I suppose. When do you think we'll be ready to leave?
I should say it will depend on the surf. Oh, the boat should be fit day after tomorrow. But if the surf is heavy, we won't be able to launch safely here and we'll have to move to the other beach. And that will take a day.
The fourth day, then?
Yes, I should say so, barring any trouble, that is.
Yes, sir. Now, I wouldn't want you to think that I'm expecting anything bad to happen, sir. It was the boys that asked me to talk to you about this.
About what?
The way they feel, sir. Well, we're all in this together, everybody equal, taking the same chances.
Yes, that's right.
Going through that surf and trying to make the crossing to the mainland, anything might happen to any one of us.
Yes, that's true, too.
Well, what the boys mean, sir, is that right now, everybody's not quite equal, and that's because you're the only one who can keep us on course once we start.
I suppose I am, yes.
Yeah. Well, now, I repeat, we aren't looking for anything bad to happen, but suppose it did to you. Then where would the rest of us be? What with 300 miles of ocean to cross and none of us knowing how to keep us on a course?
I see. You want me to teach you navigation?
No.
Emily.
Not just me, sir. All of us.
No, don't do it.
What's come over you, my dear?
Well, they're up to something.
I don't know what's upset you, Mrs. Wooldridge. We're thinking of you, too. The captain wouldn't want you to drift about until you died of thirst in case something happens to him. Right, sir?
Well, that's quite right. But I'll tell you what upset Mrs. Wooldridge. Perhaps we can straighten it out. You told her she was to blame for our misfortune, Millie, because she was aboard. It's a ridiculous thing for you to say, and it frightened her.
Well, some of the chums got to talking about it, and they got a bit excited.
It wasn't the other men. It was you.
I only said what they told me to, Mrs. Wooldridge, and I'm sorry that I did. None
Has
of us...
Has there been any more conversation about it?
Oh, no, sir, no. The only thing they talk about now is getting home. I don't suppose we're much for brains, sir, but do you think we could learn navigation?
Oh, yes. At least enough to reach the coast. Then one could feel his way until he reached a port. We'll have the first lesson tonight.
Thank you, sir. The boys will be pleased to hear this.
I'll be with you in a moment, then.
Night, Mrs. Wooldridge.
Don't teach them. If you do, you won't be important to them any longer. They'll be in control. I know that that's what they want. They're evil men, dear, capable of anything. What have they left us here?
Now, Emily, stop it. Stop it. Oh, in a situation like this, we must be realistic. It's for the good of all that the men should learn to navigate.
My husband returned an hour later, quite pleased with the spirit of the men and the progress they had made during their first lesson. I tried to match his confidence with my own, but the next day that became impossible. There was no mistaking the hate for me in the faces of the men when my husband was not present. But he had no chance to realize this because the expressions changed when he appeared. The men took on a rough good humor and an enthusiasm for their work and the future that completely beguiled him. At times I doubted my reason, but at others I was sure that I didn't imagine this purposeful change of attitude. Then during the afternoon, I was able to speak with Hayward, the one I hoped felt less strongly toward me. He was on his way to the spring that supplied our water when I was able to meet him alone.
Mrs. Wooldridge! What are you doing here?
I wanted to talk to you.
I don't want to talk to you. I've got nothing to say.
Why did Lawson lie to my husband and me?
I don't know what you mean.
He told us last night that you men didn't blame me for what happened.
Well, we don't.
That you realized how ridiculous the things were that you said to me the first day. That I was the cause...
That's right.
But then why do you hate me?
Hate you? We don't, Mrs. Wooldridge.
The expressions on your faces when my husband isn't there couldn't mean anything else. What is it? What are you thinking?
You must be mistaken, Mrs. Wooldridge. All we talk about is getting home.
That's what Lawson told you to say if you had to talk to me, isn't it?
I don't know what you mean.
He said the same thing last night in the same words. But he was lying, wasn't he, just like you are?
You've got no reason to say that, Mrs. Wooldridge. I don't know what we'd want to lie about.
About what your plans are.
Plans? Why, to get home as quick as we can. Isn't that what you plan?
You're lying to me.
But, Mrs. Wooldridge... Why should you say that?
That's not what you're thinking. What are your plans?
What I told you. to go home.
You're lying to me. I can tell from your face.
It's been a trying experience, Mrs. Wooldridge. Perhaps your mind is playing tricks. I don't know what else could upset you like this.
Final repairs on the boat were completed that day, and all of the next was consumed in moving it to the safer beach. The surf was not as high as the shore was protected by a curve of reef from which I cast my set lines. The crashing waves caused terrible currents, and the frightening prospect of maneuvering a boat through them was real enough to keep my mind clear of my other fears, which seemed to have no basis at the moment. At nightfall, I was huddled close to our fire as my husband awoke from a short nap.
Oh. How long have I slept?
No more than an hour.
Seemed like days. I will sleep days once I get into a bed again. What luxury that'll be, eh?
Oh, I hope everything will be all right tomorrow and with the crossing.
No reason it shouldn't be. A stout boat. We're with the prevailing winds.
No, you don't have to make it sound easy for me, you know. Just tell me if there's a good chance of reaching safety.
There's a very good chance, Emily.
Oh.
And I must say that I'm happy to see your mood improved. Morale will be most important when we're at sea.
Well, I'll help the best I can.
I know you will, my dear.
Oh, Captain!
Oh, Lawson, yes. What is it?
I hope you don't mind. The boys are a bit uneasy tonight. They asked me to come.
Oh, anything wrong?
Nothing special, sir. They wonder if you could tell them where we'll land. Roughly, that is. They wanted me to ask if you'd talk to them for a bit.
I suppose they are uneasy. Yes, I'll have a word with them.
Oh, they'd like that, sir. You know, myself, I'm not troubled. I'd say it's in the lap of the gods. So while you go to see them, I think I'll have a look at the beach again. See how the surf is running.
I think that'd be a good idea. Let me know how the currents are crossing, will you?
Aye, sir.
Well, I'll be back in a few minutes.
No, no, don't leave
only
me.
A few moments, Emily, dear. Now, you try to rest.
All right, Mrs. Wooldridge.
What are you going to do?
Nothing, Mrs. Wooldridge. But you, it's time to tend your set lines out on the surf. I think I'll go with you in case you have an accident on those slippery rocks in the dark.
No, I'm going to do it in the morning.
You've done it before at night. You've killed enough men, and now it's an eye for an eye.
I haven't killed anybody. You're insane. My husband...
You'll kill him if you call for him. The boys are ready to take care of him if you do. And we don't need him anymore.
Oh, I knew.
It's all up to you, Mrs. Wooldridge. Ain't fair of you to risk us all when a slip off the reef will save us.
I won't shout.
Come along, then. We've seen what a woman at sea brings about, but it won't happen again in the small boat. Seen what happens, and what you see is proof. We'll talk no more about
it. No, you can't do it.
Captain, let her go.
It's all right, darling. Everything's all right. But thank heaven the other men were more human than Lawson. They let him lead them until tonight. They couldn't justify murder and told me what he planned to do.
After 3 weeks, the five survivors of the Maid of Athens reached the port of Stanley in the Falklands. As Emily Wooldridge stated it in her chronicle, in time to hear of the death of Charles Dickens, a sorrowful landfall after all our trials. Suspense. Presented by Autolite, tonight's star, Miss Agnes Moorhead.
This is Harlow Wilcox speaking for Autolite, the world's largest independent manufacturer of automotive electrical equipment. In 28 plants from coast to coast, Autolite makes over 400 products for cars, trucks, tractors, planes, boats, and industry. These products include bumpers, die castings, industrial thermometers and batteries, such as the famous Autolite Stayfull, ignition-engineered Autolite spark plugs, both standard and resistor types, voltage regulators, wire and battery cable, Autolite bullseye sealed beam units, and Autolite original service parts for all Autolite electrical systems. Autolite is proud to serve the greatest names in the industry. So, from bumper to tail light, you're always right with Autolite.
Next week, we bring to life one of the most famous detectives in literature as we dramatize E.C. Bentley's classic novel of deduction, Trent's Last Case. Our star, Mr. Ronald Coleman. That's next week on Suspense. Suspense is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis, with music composed by Lucian Morawick and conducted by Lud Gluskin. Emily Wooldridge's The Wreck of the Maid of Athens was adapted for Suspense by Gil Dowd. In tonight's story, Joseph Kearns was heard as Captain Wooldridge and Ben Wright as Lawson. Featured in the cast were Larry Thor, Richard Peel, and Jack Crucian.
Agnes Moorhead may soon be seen in the Universal International picture Magnificent Obsession.
And remember, next week, Mr. Ronald Coleman in Trent's Last Case.
You can buy Autolite original service parts, Autolite standard or resistor type spark plugs, and Autolite stay full batteries at your neighborhood Autolite dealers. Switch to Autolite. Good night.
This is the CBS Radio Network.
Suspense on Tuned to Yesterday from November 30th, 1953 on CBS. You're listening to an hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levenier. Although television was pushing a lot of radio off of the air in terms of popularity, it was still going strong in 1954, in the week of July 31st specifically. If you were living in New York at that time and were tuning in for some entertainment at 8 p.m., you could have heard True or False on WOR, a news and then dancing party on WABC, WQXR's Symphony Hall, or this next broadcast of Escape, called Night of the Guns, starring Herb Ellis, Byron Kane, and Jack Crucian, from July 31st, 1954, on CBS.
Tired of the everyday grind? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all? We offer you Escape. Escape. Designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Yeah. Here's a buck, mister.
Permit me to refuse the money. Permit me to return to the matter of the Yankee merchandise.
Just told you, poet.
We sold out our stock of shirts, our ties, our stock.
You are the men who have a catch and have saved the Caribbean from Miami?
Yes, sir. We're the men who have a catch and have sailed.
That's who we are, poet. And
so
you...
it is a simple matter, then. Since you are these men, it is a simple matter. We will make arrangements for the removal of the merchandise.
Now, look, mister.
Rene, my name. Permit me. That is my name.
Thanks. It's this way, Rene. My understanding of things poetic is a little shaky these days.
Mine, too.
Yeah, his, too.
Are you trying to be clever? Or perhaps it pleases you to tweak my passions? The merchandise. Permit me, but the merchandise.
When shall we remove it from your boat?
Mr. Rene, I simply have got to explain something to you. It's evident that you're mistaken.
We are not mistaken. You had been much a night. We will be
what? Said Rene a fond farewell, Josh. He needs to keep his head covered from his patient's son.
But it is a matter of... No, you cannot. The merchandise.
You cannot refuse about the merchandise. You cannot refuse.
Josh and I walked on. I looked over my shoulder and saw Renee's face become suddenly gray, suddenly old, and then a blur fading into the crowd that swarmed the narrow street. Episodes of the dream trip, cockfight followed by a native poet making calypso on a type of merchandise that didn't exist. Poet. Also dealer in intangibles, souvenir to be stored away. Anecdotes to regale the young ladies of New Kensington, Pennsylvania on our return. When the dream money ran out and the place to come back to was New Kensington, PA. But now, unguided tour of Port-au-Prince and a side street you never believed you'd walk.
Why? What are you thinking about?
I was thinking I like it. I like what we're doing. I like where we are.
Me too. Yes, sir, me too. It's all around you. It's wonderful.
There's no regrets, huh, Josh?
You mean we gave up a nice going haberdashery business and took off?
That's what I mean. I talked you into it. No regrets, huh?
What do you mean? You talked me into it. This idea, this dream, if you will.
I will.
I remember to this very minute the night it germinated in my brain. We were sitting in the dorm of the good old University of Pittsburgh, stripped to the waist, it being a hot night prior to graduation, and a bottle of beer in the hand.
And you said, Haiti, someday let's buy a boat, you said.
See? You conceded it was my idea.
Sure it was, Josh.
Then you said Haiti.
Then I said Haiti.
Why?
Huh?
The Citadel.
What about...
Just I gotta see it, that's all. The Citadel of Henri Christophe. Ever since I was a kid, I've been reading about it and wondering...
We'll see it.
When?
Look, something I gotta explain to you, kid. A couple of fellas like us, they hit a new country after an ocean voyage. You know, they need time to condition themselves, become acclimated, mingle with the group, you know, meet
in
some
In my
of...
reading on the subject of young women of Haiti...
Yeah.
I have read that the young women of Haiti are sheltered and circumspect, and a formal introduction arranged by a mutual friend or acquaintance is the etiquette to be followed when a visiting gentleman has the wish...
Show me where it says.
Why, Iris? I just want to make sure you and me...
Yeah. Visiting gentlemen, that's what. Le Café de Pavillon de Toulon.
Now, don't change the subject, right? What?
Le Café de Pavillon de Toulon. Translation, Café of the Pavilions of the Small Moon. Oh, my.
Ah, you feel okay? The heat, the excitement of the new...
That sign over the cafe there. Come on, Josh, let's go get moonstruck.
I want to.
Oh, my.
Me too. I'm glad I said what I said on graduating from the University of Pittsburgh.
After me, kid. Bartender.
Vous plaisir, monsieur.
The pleasure presents no problem, bartender. First, we want rum.
Oui, monsieur.
Right. Hush, kid. Let there be hush. Leave the bottle, bartender. We made it, kid. We made the dream. A toast, huh?
Sir Haiti. I love you.
Yeah. To Dessalines, Toussaint, and the jeweled Bay of Guinea.
And to the jungle mysteries and the delights of them.
And to the jungle mysteries and the delights of them. Hey, you turn a phrase, monsieur.
Then may I propose still another toast?
Be our guest.
To the young lady who sits there.
Where?
At the tavern in shadow. And the fall of carried sunshine across her cheek. There, you see?
I see. Oh, my.
Where? I don't see her. Where, Rye? Show me, too.
You could look upon her with nearness?
I could. I'm just a chap who could.
Come then. She has whispered it to me. Bring them to me. Bring the voyageurs to me what her whisper.
Rye, where?
The lady whispered, Josh. And it's a call I've been waiting for.
Rye?
Bring the bottle, Josh.
Now I see her. Oh. I'll bring the bottle.
After you, monsieur.
Pepe.
After you, Pepe.
Billy, the voyageur for whom you have whispered.
Merci, Pepe.
Seat yourself with Bibi, monsieur. For the nearness.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah.
I'm Josh Ford from New Kensington, PA, and this is my buddy, Ryan Dixon. He's from New Kensington, too. At present, we're retired haberdashers.
I am Bibi, and I have longed for the time of our meeting.
Pepe.
Are we?
You did a splendid job of greeting us.
And you no longer have a need for me.
And we no longer have a need for you.
Then I shall make my small departure.
No hard feelings, Pepe. It's just...
Till another scene.
Yeah, till then. You were lonesome for us, Stevie, for both of us.
The moon was full and it grew slender. For the passage of this time, I have longed for you.
Oh, you don't even know us, baby. We live thousands of miles apart in different worlds. How could you...
Josh.
You ever been in New Kensington, baby? University of Pittsburgh?
Have Josh.
You... What the mansell said...
And for your boat. And the things of your boat. For these two I have longed.
Huh? You talk in circles, Miss Baby. I don't...
The merchandise of your boat.
Baby.
See?
A poet of your country said merchandise to us. We gave him a buck. It's a tired subject that isn't worth a nickel more.
You have sold it into the other.
We haven't sold a thing. We gave him a dollar. And I don't mind telling you, the budget we've got worked out for this trip is...
Then it is a matter of more money.
Could be. More money for what, baby?
Haggler. Bargainer. Hawker.
We're not haggling, lady. All we got on our boat is a few supplies. Some canned fruit juices and tins of dried beef. You want
them? Demand enough more money for the merchandise you brought from Miami. We will pay it. And there will be no delay.
Baby, we started out real good together, and suddenly you're... Josh, how do you tell a beautiful girl she's lousing everything?
Well...
The room at the end of the passageway upstairs. It is where I shall be. With the more money. In 10 minutes. Be there. At last.
She moved away from us, and she moved like some uncoiling phrase of primitive melody. It took her maybe a half minute to cross the floor and vanish behind a glass bead curtain that made small songs as she moved through it. That left maybe 9.5 minutes to toast the many things about Bibi that were worth drinking to. And then all that was left was to find out what it was all about.
Room at the end of the passageway upstairs, she said.
Uh-huh.
You know what I think?
No, I don't.
I think she's got us confused with somebody else. A couple of entirely different fellas.
I heard you.
Funny, you got to admit.
Uh-huh.
Funny. First a native poet, big song and dance about some merchandise we haven't got. And this Bibi, what merchandise we're supposed to have, right? Right.
Yeah.
That noise. It's already happened to us once today.
But now it's inside.
Hey, that came from down there. That's where
she... Come on.
It's locked, Rye.
Bibi!
Open it!
You and me, kid.
Yeah. Right. Look.
What lay on the floor wasn't worth looking at. Thin lines of blood crisscrossed Bibi's face and throat like some abstract design in horror. The new twist on death in the afternoon. Young lady, beautiful young lady, slashed to death by the spurs of a gamecock. The bird jumped to the windowsill and crowed to death once more. And across the now bay, a pretty pink and blue sign smiled, "Welcome to Haiti." One thing about being in the haberdashery business in New Kensington, Pennsylvania, is that you've got the world ahead of you. Keep in mind that anything is possible when you finally get to Haiti and come across a beautiful woman slashed to death by a fighting bird bred to kill. Accept it and then run. Like Josh and I did, 3 blocks until a sign said Hotel of Seven Sisters, fans in every room. We paid for one night in advance. The sign wasn't kidding. There was a fan. This one you grasped in the hand, waved back and forth under the chin, creating refreshment. And letting the sound of the island drift in through the open window.
Rye?
Huh?
We shouldn't have run away.
We're strangers in a strange country, baby. Who knows what we're supposed to do?
Anybody who dies is a concern of...
I'll get it.
Meet me.
Hey, Josh. Look who, the poet. Come in, come in. How'd you find us?
I inquired of two Americans running in the noonday heat.
Well, why are you looking for us?
An explanation of the events at the Café de Pavillon de Teluna. The killing of the girl Bibi was a mistake. Permit me, what is the hour?
Almost 2:30.
A good. An excellent time. For a punctual competitor of mine will arrive in a moment, and the deal will be consummated.
You're doing it again, Rene. You're talking riddles.
Oh, forgive me. Like so. The merchandise you have brought, those of us across the water there, the small way across the water, we wait for the gun, so...
Gun?
The final way to purchase human dignity.
Born.
Huh?
Get the picture? This guy's a revolutionary. Hey, you're a real revolutionary, aren't you? You think we've got guns for a revolution or something? You know what they're going to say in New Kensington? They're going to...
Josh. Renee, what about the girl? Why did that beautiful girl have to die like that?
Bibi. Unfortunate. Like so. She was killed because... Oh, permit me, the compatriot whom we are expecting.
Well, tell him it's like so. Somebody's got our boat mixed up with somebody else's, huh?
Hello, Renee.
Renee.
He's dead. My intention. Quickly now, come.
Now listen here.
Or you will lie down beside this man. Also dead. Quickly.
Where are we going?
Quickly.
I asked you.
Pistol barrels lacerate so. Now, quickly.
The front sight of his gun had cut my cheek, and there was nothing to do but put my hand to it. He trotted us outside. The man in goatee, U.S. Army surplus, and German Luger into a waiting cab. Unhappy driver looked at my cheek and then at the upholstery and then shrugged about the whole thing.
He'd better take us somewhere where he can get his cheek attended to,
said my friend Josh.
Sure.
Was the stir my friend Josh created. In a while, the bleeding stopped. We got out in a part of Haiti where it was no longer Port-au-Prince, where it became the apron of jungle around the city. A mansion of columns and glazed brick and flamingos looking coy behind royal palms. A butler in knee breeches told us we were late, that everybody was in the auditorium.
A private theater, gentlemen. You may watch if you wish. I'll tell Etienne you're here.
Etienne? Well, who's he?
You try to make a break from here, you'd be shot down before...
What sort of name is that? Etienne.
In there.
Golly.
Voodoo. Native dance, Haitian time.
Boy.
Frankly, gentlemen, I wouldn't be that impressed. As you appear to be, I mean. They're all of them professional dancers, $20 each for the performance.
Who are you?
Your host.
Etienne?
Yes. This way, please.
And you're the man who can tell us.
About Bibi. About René.
You.
It's about guns. It's all a mistake.
I know.
Somebody got our boat mixed up with...
I know. In here.
Now.
What's the matter? Why are you looking so unhappy about...
How to tell you what I must.
It'd be crazy if we tried to run, wouldn't we?
Oh, yes. You'd be shut down.
Like the poet was.
With more sadness. You are innocent, you see. René was not.
Oh.
An enemy, as also was the girl. They have their cause, we have ours.
And both of you after the guns?
We have them. They came on another boat, not yours.
What am I supposed to say? Use them in good health?
It's just that nothing like this is... Well, we don't know what...
You don't realize what's happening to you now, do you?
A little bit. The sliced cheek I have.
Yes, that's an indication. The reason, of course, I haven't offered you a physician or even iodine... should be coming apparent now.
Correct me. Josh and I know there's a thing about guns. About a revolution coming up close by.
Also, about two murders.
And you can't let us go.
I don't mind telling you. I am a patriot. Murder is necessary, it seems. It goes with the word. We will have to take you far away. And you must be lost. Forever. Please. Try to understand.
Said with grave concern. And a door opened. Some men walked in.
The man who had picked us up at the hotel and two others, also looking grave, also looking concerned. Tight-fitting dark suit, so tight you could almost tell the caliber of guns the boat had made. We went then on a boat ride, a boat called Bumba.
Look. Look there. The Citadel.
Floating on a sea of tropic moon. The Citadel of Henri Christophe.
Ever since I was a kid, Ryan.
Ever since you were a kid.
You admire our citadel?
Listen, Etienne.
Of course.
The Citadel is practically all we came to see in Haiti. We're getting a fine view now. Really, all of it we want.
True.
So why don't you say the word to turn this boat around?
Saying the dead are silent.
Now, look.
And yours will be privileged. You will die a hero's death in the cause of human dignity.
Human dignity. The poet used the same words. On opposite sides, and both of you using the same slogan.
Regretful. Homelieu. Joanneau. Par ici. The both of you now onto the ground.
And this is where...
Quickly, quickly. Move quickly.
Friend, if you didn't have that gun...
I have it. Straight ahead. One thing I'd want before this is over...
Tour through the Citadel.
Yeah.
Josh.
Uh-huh.
We can't just let them shoot us down and leave us here to rot in a sinkhole like this.
You think we ought to make a break for it?
I would say so. Listen, just before we hit that clearing up ahead...
You there. You too. If you are discussing running away, you will be shot like pigs.
Right.
Hmm.
I still think we ought to try.
Uh-huh.
Like now?
Right.
Yes!
The man who stood ankle deep in the stinking waters was the man we had seen before, Pepe. A man in a bar called the Pavilion of the Small Moon. A man who had taken us to Beatty.
You recognize me, I can tell.
A bandolier of bullets over his shoulder, the snout of his submachine gun sniffing a circle at our belt buckle. Etienne and the others who had brought us here face deep in the mud. A brown marsh water washing their blood away slow. Very slow.
Eventually, I knew they had to come here, where the guns are cached. See, those cases. The guns, the cause of everything.
Boy, are we glad to see you.
Truly?
I don't like the way you said that. What do you have in mind?
These whom I have slain. They were going to kill you, correct?
They said it wasn't because we'd been nice to Bibi and the poet, but because...
You were nice to them?
Well... Sure.
My heart is filled with kindness for you both, for they were my friends.
I ask you something. What do you have in mind?
Surely you know. You must die. Word must not leak out of what happened here. This of the guns, this of the killings.
Right?
Yeah. Now listen, you.
Oui?
A favor.
Huh?
My friend here, all he wants to do is take a look at the Citadel.
He may. There it is. Look.
My friend here, he wants to take a look up close. This was his dream trip, the Citadel of Henri Christophe, his dream place.
I see. Oui.
Crazy monument built by a crazy king.
You see all those cannons pushed through those embrasures?
At this,
You see all those cannons, Ryan?
What about them?
Not one ever fired. You know what else?
What else, Josh?
This was built on an exact line with the Great Pyramid of Egypt and a great pyramid built by the Mayas of Central America.
That way. Enough. Look down. Christoph used to force his slaves to jump from this spot. He enjoyed their screams. Will you scream?
I don't think so.
Good. Please do not believe I am vile, messieurs. You were unlucky enough to stumble on a small wall. Neither side can afford your staying alive. Pity.
Some pity.
Now, alive or dead from a bullet. Jump.
Now, hold it a second. One more word with my friend. Josh.
What do you want?
All of it. Your fault.
Mine?
Leading the business, the boat, Haiti, all of it.
How can you talk like that?
And a citadel. What is it? Brick and moss. Hope you get a nice view of the east wing on the way down. You know what you are?
What?
A child, a bird brain of a child.
You're not going to talk to
a
me like that.
A real square sod kicking knucklehead.
Why, you miserable...
You got to do better than that.
Oh, Miss America, fine before you die.
Roll the
baby right against the knot. Quiet, walk out. Why, grab him.
Rye?
Fly?
Yeah, I'm okay. You?
Okay. What about him?
We'll tie him up, leave him, I don't know, something.
Fly?
What?
You see that over there?
See what over there?
That slab.
Well, what about it?
That Don Cristo's tomb. He was buried there. Right where he was killed. Right over there. Something, isn't it? Really something. Boy.
Escape has brought you Night of the Guns, a story written and directed by David Friedkin and Morton Fine. Featured in the cast were Herb Ellis, Byron Kane, Jack Crucian, and Jay Novello. Also heard were Lillian Bias, Chep Mencken, John Daner, and Paula Pascal. Your announcer, George Walsh. The special music for Escape is composed and conducted by Leif Stevens. Next week.
You are adrift in a native canoe somewhere off the Solomon Islands. Ahead of you lie the unknown terrors of native savagery. And closing in on you is a white man whose gunboat will smash you to the bottom of the sea.
So listen next week when Escape brings you John Russell's story, The Price of the Head.
Escape, on Tuned to Yesterday from the last day of July 1954 on CBS. And that wraps this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. It's been a pleasure.